Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The High Court orders the state to allow Mbada Diamonds to deploy security guards at its mining concessions following government's move to shut down diamond mining operations in Manicaland province.
Security personnel are entitled to remain on the ground just to make sure that nothing of their staff is removed. But we are basically saying that they were not despoiled. We gave them 90 days in terms of the act to remove their equipment.
The World Food Programme says it needs $220 million to provide assistance to millions of Zimbabweans until next year.
We're not yet at the harvest period in April or May, and the people's food stocks are becoming depleted. There are many vulnerable people, as we know, already in the countryside areas.
And police summon Warriors coach Callisto Pasua to give evidence in an alleged Warriors match-fixing scandal.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The High Court has ruled that Mbada Diamonds, which is among several firms that were ordered by the state to stop operations in Manicaland province, can only deploy security guards at its mining compounds but can't resume diamond mining activities due to lack of proper licenses to mine the gems. The government recently shut down mining activities in Marange Diamond Fields and others, claiming that the companies had no licenses and refused to be part of a national diamond mining entity designed to take over all operations in the region. Our correspondent Thomas Shiripasi reports.
Harare High Court Judge Joseph Mafusire today ruled that Mbada Diamonds was wrongfully dispossessed of its property when police details were deployed to guard the Marange Diamond Fields following the government's directive for all the diamond mining companies to stop all mining activities in Manicaland province. This ruling was confirmed by Advocate Louis Uriri, one of the lawyers representing the police in this matter.
The learned judge handed down his judgment this morning, where he finds that, in fact, Mbada was wrongfully dispossessed of the property in question. He orders restoration subject to the fact that Mbada will not be able to mine or to conduct any operations on the mine, in view of the fact that the licenses had expired. That means that technically they were wrongfully removed, which position we don't agree with and which position we are in fact appealing. It also means that they cannot mine, they cannot undertake any operations on the ground until, according to the judge, when the question of the validity of their mining licenses is determined.
Uriri, however, said the state was going to appeal against the court's decision, arguing that authorities followed provisions of the law when they removed the diamond companies from their concessions.
Security personnel are entitled to remain on the ground just to make sure that nothing of their staff is removed. But we are basically saying that they were not despoiled. We gave them 90 days in terms of the act to remove their equipment, and we look forward to them removing their equipment. And to the extent that we don't agree with that finding, specific finding, we will appeal it to the Supreme Court.
The judge, however, found that Mbada Diamonds could not resume mining operations since the company had not renewed its operating license. Executives of Mbada Diamonds were not available for comment. Mines Minister Walter Chidakwa last month ordered the closure of all companies that were mining diamonds in Chiatswa on the basis that they had not renewed their operating licenses. The companies were also allegedly refusing to merge to form one entity that was being proposed by government. Chidakwa said the merger was meant to curb leakages in the diamond sector after fiscal authorities complained that the companies were not declaring all their returns from diamond sales. Following the move to kick out all diamond companies from Chiadzwa, President Robert Mugabe stunned the nation when he claimed that government lost more than $15 billion in potential revenue in Chiadzwa. To date, no one has been arrested in connection with the missing funds. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, in a related story, the alleged looting of $15 billion in potential diamond revenue is unsettling opposition parties in Zimbabwe that are now urging President Robert Mugabe to step down for failing to curb corruption in the mining of the country's diamonds. Reporter Blessing Zulu has more.
Former Mines Minister Obed Mpofu has vowed that he will never comment on President Robert Mugabe's remarks that $15 billion in diamonds revenue vanished in Chiadzwa. In brief remarks to Studio 7, Mpofu said, quote, "Look, I will never comment on the issue of diamonds. I am no longer the minister responsible. You must interview the Minister of Mines. I will never comment on that issue." Close quote. Mpofu is now the Microeconomic Planning and Investment Promotion Minister. But Mpofu was in charge when the money allegedly disappeared. In 2012, a report released by Partnership Africa Canada said Zimbabwe's Marange fields had seen, quote, "the biggest plunder of diamonds since Cecil Rhodes." Rhodes was the colonial magnate who exploited South Africa's diamonds more than a century ago. The Canadian non-profit organization is a member of the Kimberley Process, the international organization set up to stop the trade in so-called blood diamonds or diamonds mined to finance conflict. It alleged that at least $2 billion worth of diamonds had been stolen from the country's diamond fields and ended up in the pockets of President Mugabe's ruling elite. But Mpofu at the time rubbished the report, calling it nonsensical and a work of detractors. Responding to questions from parliamentarians today, Mines Minister Walter Chidakwa said his ministry will investigate the alleged looting of the $15 billion. At that time, a lone protester was also demonstrating outside parliament with a placard and a t-shirt written, "Where is our money?" Opposition parties are calling on President Robert Mugabe to step down, saying the alleged pillaging of the funds was done under his watch. In a press statement, the opposition People's Democratic Party recommended that, quote, "President Mugabe resigns with immediate effect as he has failed the nation as its chief executive." Close quote. The party added that a commission of inquiry must be set up by parliament to investigate the alleged looting which occurred in Chiadzwa, and prosecution of those responsible must follow. MDCT spokesperson Obed Gutu said the office of the auditor general must be mandated to investigate the case. Gutu said all the money that was looted must be returned to the country. Kurawo Nichiwai, spokesman of the Washman Ngube-led MDC, also urged Mr. Mugabe to resign for failing to deal with corruption. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, DC, this is Blessing Zulu.
The World Food Program says it needs $220 million to provide assistance to an estimated 2.2 million people until 2017. Labour and Social Services Minister Priska Mufumira says that the number of people in need of food assistance has risen to more than 4 million. But the WFP says that 3 million is still the official figure. In a press statement, the WFP said vulnerable people in Zimbabwe will continue to receive relief assistance from the United Nations World Food Programme, though what is usually a period of bounty, but which this year has turned out into a time of want. The WFP noted that it's extending its relief program due to the punishing impact of El Nino on the food security of the country. WFP is this month providing food and cash-based assistance to some 730,000 vulnerable people. WFP Communications Officer for Southern Africa, David Orr, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that urgent food is needed in the country.
The latest figures we have are that nearly 3 million people are food insecure. That's about a quarter of the rural population in Zimbabwe. And we do expect this figure to increase into later this year and into next year. We're not yet at the harvest period in April or May, and the people's food stocks are becoming depleted. There are many vulnerable people, as we know already, in the countryside areas. And as I say, this figure will probably rise over coming months.
The government is now putting the figure at around 4 million. Is this a fair assessment?
Well, I did hear reports that a minister in the government had used the figure of 4 million in a statement yesterday. My understanding is this is her projection of what the numbers that of food insecure people that there could be later in the year. And of course, this is indeed possible, but we are still going by the official figures that the government released recently, and that's nearly 3 million.
And let's talk about the funding. Are you happy with the levels of assistance that you are getting from your traditional donors?
I would say, of course, we're very grateful for the assistance we have got so far. This is not just a crisis in Zimbabwe, but across the region, we have very high levels of food insecurity in this region, nearly 30 million, including South Africa, as a result of last year's bad harvest and now the impact of the El Nino weather event, which has brought more and continued drought to the region.
That was WFP Communications Officer for Southern Africa, David Orr, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg, South Africa. As reported yesterday, UNICEF said Zimbabwe faces its worst malnutrition crisis in 15 years, with tens of thousands of children requiring urgent treatment. VOA Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele has more.
Poor rains induced by the El Nino weather phenomenon have hampered food production, and diminishing reserves have left many people in rural parts of Zimbabwe short of essential supplies. In an interview with AFP, UNICEF representative in Zimbabwe, Jane Muita, says an estimated 50,000 children are in need of food assistance, with 33,000 needing treatment for acute malnutrition. Muita says such level of malnutrition has not been seen in Zimbabwe for many years.
More than 15 years, this is the first time that we are seeing like this kind of thing, especially the condition of malnutrition that we are seeing in children. It has not been seen before in this country.
Muita says their research has mostly been confined to the rural areas in all 10 provinces, but indications are there is need for research in urban areas as well.
We don't have any assessment that was done in urban areas, and in fact, at the moment, we are thinking that it is important to also look at the urban areas.
To help alleviate the situation, UNICEF is requesting $21 million in aid. This comes in the wake of other requests from donors, including the WFP, or World Food Programme, to alleviate hunger. Muita says severe acute malnutrition is dangerous for children.
Malnutrition is a very dangerous condition for children to have, specifically in the age before they reach the age of 2. We are talking about under 5 malnutrition, and at this moment we are talking about acute malnutrition, which we can deal with, and by feeding children, by making sure that they are not suffering from diarrhea.
One of the long-term effects of malnutrition, explains Muita, is stunting, which she says affects 28% of Zimbabwe's children.
Stunting is a condition that is chronic form of malnutrition, but has the biggest impact before the age of 2. If we don't intervene before the age of 2, they live with that problem. So they are stunted, but not only are they stunted, but there are other impacts of malnutrition that are lifelong, including intelligence, their performance in school is affected, and they are also prone to death from other illnesses.
In acknowledgement of the severe food shortage in the country, the government recently declared a state of disaster and has appealed for food aid. An estimated 4 million people need food assistance. Reporting for Studio 7 from Washington, this is Ndimiake Mwakalele.
A high-powered delegation of Zimbabwean women is in New York here in the United States for an annual conference on the status of women, set to discuss, amongst many other issues, strides that have been made in the promotion of gender equality and the empowerment of women globally. Nyaradzo Mashayamombe of Tege Life International Trust, one of the child rights organizations participating at the conference, tells us that it is imperative for governments to commit to funding some of the recommendations that come out of such gatherings.
Yes, I'm in New York for this CSW, or Commission on the Status of Women, the 60th edition. It is about exploring ways to empower women economically, as well as to ensure gender equality between men and women, girls and boys. This meeting takes place every year here at the United Nations in New York.
What is coming out, especially from the women's delegation from Zimbabwe? What are some of the challenges that women in Zimbabwe are facing that they would like to see resolved?
We know that in 2015, the world signed the Sustainable Goals, which is also known as the Agenda 2030. And so Zimbabwe is also one of the countries that signed those Sustainable Goals. And under the Sustainable Goals, one of the issues that are coming out clearly is issues of gender equality. Equality and access to opportunities equally between men and women, girls and boys, and also the issues of gender-based violence is a key issue that's coming out. Issues also that are coming out is an issue of economic empowerment for girls and young women, women and the youth.
That was Nyaradzo Mashayamombe, the founder of Tega Life International Trust in New York.
And now we take a look at regional and international news.
Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton were the big winners yesterday in the latest round of U.S. presidential primary voting. Trump's victory in Florida ended the campaign of rival Marco Rubio. But Governor John Kasich kept his White House hopes alive with a win in his home state of Ohio. The Republican race is now a three-man race, including Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who sees himself as Trump's chief rival.
In the Democratic race, big victories in Florida, North Carolina, and Ohio for frontrunner Hillary Clinton helped corral many more delegates than her rival, Senator Bernie Sanders. But with Sanders falling further behind in convention delegates, Clinton took a major step towards securing the Democratic Party nomination. Some Zimbabweans like Sheila Chitate, who live in America, are closely following the polls. This is what she thinks Zimbabweans can learn from the American Party polls.
I think what they can learn is how fiercely the candidates fight for their nomination, the party nomination. But I don't waste time once they see, like, look at Marco Rubio, how he quickly just stopped his campaign when he saw that his election was going nowhere. So just learning to let go and join forces and fight the other party.
But at the end of the day, do you think that this is the actual participatory democracy that people in Zimbabwe may be looking for?
I think so. That openness, backing your candidate without fear of what maybe the ruling party or whoever is in charge might do to you. Just that openness. I'm looking at the candidacy of Donald Trump, which a lot of us don't support. But those who stand with him are not afraid to come up despite all the negatives and support their candidate.
And there's some...
We have a lot to learn in that respect of just standing for what you believe and learning to let go if you don't make it.
That was Sheila Chitate, a Zimbabwean living in Texas, USA, speaking with Studio 7.
U.S. President Barack Obama has selected Federal Appeals Court Judge Merrick Garland as his nominee to fill the Supreme Court vacancy created by the death of Justice Antonio Scalia last month.
And police in the Belgian capital Brussels have killed a suspect armed with a Kalashnikov AK assault rifle during an anti-terror raid linked to the November 13 attacks in Paris.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
A self-employed father of three's life was turned upside down on December 15th when he was knocked down by a speeding motorist, breaking both of his legs and one arm. Prior to that, youthful Tamani Ncube, a former councillor for Madlambuzi, was the breadwinner for his family. but now he's struggling to make ends meet and has had to sell some household property to raise money for the family's upkeep and his own medical costs. After an operation in December, he appeared to be on the mend until last week when doctors told him his bones had not aligned well. For that reason, a new costly surgery is needed. Now Ncube tells Studio 7 that he's at wit's end and is appealing for help.
I cannot work since I was self-employed. I cannot go to work now. I'm in physical pain and there is a toll in terms of the health bill.
You are in this very desperate situation and now you have to go for another surgery and you are appealing for funds. How much are you looking at?
I'm looking at $8,000. That's the cost of the surgery that I have to undergo if both limbs are to be attended to and the hand. It's approximately $8,000.
Those willing to help, where can they get you? How can they contact you?
They may get me on my cell number, which is also EcoCast if they want to deposit something. My cell number is 0779-232-669. That's where they may get me, or that's just the number which they may deposit anything in terms of cash. 0779-232-669.
That was a former Madlambuzi councillor Tamani Ncube on the line from Plumtree. And in sports news, investigations into match-fixing allegations have reached an advanced stage as the Zimbabwe Republic Police summon Warriors coach Callisto Pasuo to give evidence in the case that has claimed the scalp of Zifa board member Edzaika Senawuyo and Pasuo's assistant Nation Dube. Reporter Michael Kariati gives us the story.
Pasuo told Studio 7 that the police have been trying to get in touch with him since Friday, but he has not managed to talk to them because he was out of the country. He said they finally managed to get hold of him today and will be able to tell them all he knows tomorrow about the latest match-fixing escapade. Pasua, along with goalkeeper Tatenda Mkuruwa, are key witnesses in the match-fixing scandal, which has seen the suspension of Zifa board member Kasinawo, Pasua's former assistant Dube, and has also dragged in former Zifa chief executive officer Henrietta Rushwaya. Player agent Kudzai Shaba, who was banned during the Asia Gate investigations, has also been thrown into the case as one of the masterminders of the alleged match fixing. Police spokesperson Charity Charamba is on record as saying Zifa has submitted a lot of evidence with regards to this matter.
The Zimbabwe Republic Police received a formal report from Zifa, and acting on the report, they're actually going through the information.
At the same time, Zifa President Philip Chiangwa has left for South Africa, where he is scheduled to meet the South African Football Association leadership and the South African Minister of Sport, Fikile Mbalula, with regards to this scandal. Before his departure, Chiangwa dismissed the remarks by Terry Steens, who has exonerated Rushwaya from any wrongdoing. Steens, a former FIFA employee, is validating claims by Rushwaya that she was working undercover to unearth alleged match-fixing of Warriors and other matches. However, Chiangwa says his association is not entertaining Steens, as he is not a football authority since he left FIFA long back. Edinya Tanga, a prominent leader of the Zimbabwe Warriors fans, has called on Zifa to reinstate Asia Gate bans imposed on those who have been implicated again in the new match-fixing allegations. Zifa, in January, pardoned all people who had been banned following the Asia Gate scandal, but Nyatanga says they should be banned from any soccer activities for life. Nyatanga says at the soccer supporters' body, they feel they are also to blame as they sold Chiangwa the idea of pardoning the Asia Gate perpetrators.
It was our idea. We didn't know that we were making a big mistake with this one. Our focus depends.
He says so far, Chiangwa has done well as the Football Association leader, but adds that he is to deal decisively with the latest match-fixing allegations, as those accused are prepared for anything, or else he is the one who will fall.
They are prepared for anything. They are prepared for the worst.
Nyatanga and his association are organizing an anti-match-fixing parade during Zimbabwe's Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against Swaziland at the National Sports Stadium on March 28. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
In the Diaspora Forum today, we feature Brian Nira, a musician currently vying for the top spot on the United States primetime show, The Voice. Nira, born in Zimbabwe, to Zimbabwean parents, was raised in the Midwestern U.S. state of Oklahoma. The 24-year-old, whose parents are traveling pastors, discovered his musical talent at the age of four. On The Voice, he is in team and producer Pharrell Williams, who he won over after singing his own rendition of Pharrell's Happy. Nira is now preparing for The Voice battle round, hoping to continue to the end. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to Nira on his selection and representing Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe is so near and dear to my heart. My parents are from there, and I was born here in the U.S., but I go back every year to Zimbabwe. I spend a lot of my summers in Zimbabwe singing and speaking there, and so, man, I'm honored to represent this great nation.
Now you're on The Voice. How is that? And yeah. I have to say, you are very bold to get up there and sing Happy by Pharrell in front of Pharrell. It worked out for you, but, you know, what made you want to do that?
Man, I just love this song. You can't help but smile when you listen to that song. And so that's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to make America smile, you know, as my first introduction. and also Pharrell is just, I mean, he's a brilliant producer, artist, who I have so much respect for. And so that's why I did it. That's why I took that risk.
You made it to the next round. Tell us about the feeling, you know, when you are going head to head with someone on your team to make your team. How was that?
It's crazy. It's definitely probably, I'd say, you know, anyone who's ever been on The Voice with and made it, you know, to the battle rounds would say that this is probably the toughest round because there is so many uncertainties that you have to deal with. You know, will I get a good partner? You know, will we work well together? But ultimately, it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful experience.
How have your parents responded to this? You know, you telling them initially that you wanted to be on The Voice and then you making it this far.
My parents are so funny. And the thing that I've admired about them so much throughout my life is, I mean, obviously they've grown and changed, but, you know, they've never lost, you know, that Zimbabwean culture in them. And so my parents didn't even, like, really know what I was doing until The Voice actually, like, paid for a ticket for me to come out to Los Angeles.
Let's hear from Nira as we end our programming. It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that can go to space. With the air, like I don't care, maybe by the way. Because I'm happy, come along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm come along if you feel like happiness is the truth. That was Brian Nira, contestant on the U.S. primetime show The Voice, speaking with Studio 7's Tatenda Gumbo from Los Angeles.
That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Please do stand by for the Ndebele News with me.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.